Okay, this is board time Wednesday, the 25th of June. Good afternoon, commissioners. In keeping with our new process, we have minutes that are in your packet. Mm-hmm. And if those meet the board's approval, if someone could motion for approval.
You want the honors?
Make a motion to approve.
I second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, next item is I-502 application decisions. We have a letter here from the Liquor Control Board.
Oh, I brought my own.
This is mostly just information, unless the board, I'll talk to you about it when I get down to the bottom line of this letter. So this is just one example. We've gotten two or three of these letters thus far. These are letters the state is writing us in response of our comments that we sent to them regarding the applications to site marijuana facilities in Clark County. Remember, the Liquor Control Board, just like they do with liquor licenses, they'll send us copies of the marijuana licenses, the location, the application, and we can comment on those. And in this case, they actually allowed us to comment on them, choose whether we would approve or denied of them being cited or licensed in our county, and then also check whether or not we wanted a administrative hearing based on the decision. So, interestingly enough, we've started to get their response letters to us. They're basically saying that, you know, they're going to, in this case, approve the application regardless of our objection because they can't support denial based on the application or based on local zoning ordinance, zoning issues of the businesses of us and not within their board's jurisdiction. So they're basically saying, yeah, we understand you don't have zoning, but we're going to go ahead and issue the license anyways. But then the strange thing is at the bottom they also say that will not be offering or granting you a hearing on the decision, which seems strange to me. I'd have to ask Chris Horn a little bit more in detail, you know, why they would say that or deny us that hearing. But I did have a conversation with Chris this morning and talked to him about just letting you guys know we're starting to get these, that folks are going to start getting issued state licenses for these uses in Clark County. It doesn't change anything with regard to our zoning ordinance that we put in and that, you know, we have this need for consistency with federal law in order for our zoning to be effective. So this wouldn't, just because they have the license, it doesn't change anything in terms of what folks can and can't do according to our local ordinance in Clark County. I just wanted you to be aware of it. And then if you really do want to push the issue on the bottom about them not allowing us to have a hearing on the decision, you know, Chris or I can make that inquiry. I think in talking with Chris, it's kind of like how much time and resources do we want to put into trying to get an administrative hearing on their decision? How likely are they to change their mind based on our comments?
Yeah, and I wouldn't think we would want to devote much in the way of resources to an effort like that, given, and I have Chris's opinion in writing here that says our zoning trumps their permit.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, why have a hearing on a permit that has no effect?
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple questions. When we sent, I assume that this came from someone here at the county that voiced our objection due to zoning issues. Did that also include our objection due to its inconsistency with state law?
State or federal law?
I'm sorry,
federal law. And see that's interesting to me too, because in the bottom of this letter they really only cite the zoning issues and local ordinance, but we surveyed multiple departments on how they felt about this, and we included those in one letter. And so, we objected about the zoning issue, but the sheriff was objected, you know, and did bring up the federal issue and inconsistency, and the health department talked about the health impact. So there was multiple reasons for objecting to the issuance of the license. In this letter, they only mentioned the zoning ones, and so that is kind of cause for...
Do we have a copy of what was sent to them?
We do.
I would think that since they're asking us, there are more yet to come, right?
Oh, if there are more permit applications floating around, the state will probably behave in a similar fashion with every single one of them.
But we ought to be on record as to our responses back to them on to each one of these requests that would include our primary objection is due to
the federal law.
Federal law, inconsistency with federal law. We should be, and I would expect that we would respond back to them and say, you have not addressed our primary objection, please do. Even though I agree that we're not going to fight this, but still we should be on record as to why, what's the primary problem here?
Someone retrieving that? Somebody getting that letter?
Yes, Jennifer.
Okay.
Well, the liquor board issues the license.
Going to?
Yeah,
the license is a state-granted thing.
Right, state-granted. But it also says here in that last paragraph that it's up to the cities and the counties to determine within their jurisdictions whether they want to do this or not. What if, say, David decides to open up the place at Dolly's Corner and puts the building out there and opens it up? What's the county going to do?
Is Dolly's Corner inside Battleground City Limits?
Well, you're talking about in the county.
So yeah, this is actually okay. So what would happen is it would become a county code violation. They would get what's called a notice and order to cease and desist their activities, and then it would progress from there. But they
in
would
the
be
court.
Yeah, they would be court. Operating.
Is that by the new interchange, Dolly's Corner?
Well, he's just using an example.
One of them.
I know. I'm just
halfway.
If it's inside a city.
No, it's
no, it's not in the city. It's in the county.
A rural.
It's on 502.
Business center.
It looks like
it's halfway from I-5 to Battleground.
Okay, and that's where they're redeveloping the. They're tearing it up.
It's all the same. Yeah.
Are they objecting to the would-be areas that, we did circles around the schools and whatnot? That's part state law, is that correct?
Yeah, within a certain distance of schools, you can't have either liquor.
Yeah, is that what they're objecting to?
Run that by me again, sorry.
Is the state objecting to...
No,
our circles are?
No, the state has no...
The state's issuing licenses. They're saying it's okay.
So even though it's within a school zone, the state...
Well, no, they would not issue a license inside a school zone. That's against the state law. So the licenses that are being issued, one of two things occurred. One, they met all the state law requirements for being... able to apply, mm-hmm. which means they're not in a school zone and all these other things.
Okay.
Two, if they're retail, and I can't remember if they changed it for growing, but they won their lottery. So they only issued so many retail permits in so many areas. So mm-hmm. these licenses will only go out to those qualified businesses that won the lottery, basically.
Mm-hmm. What I would...
What are they disagreeing with?
We objected to them issuing licenses in Clark County because, this is against federal law, and we don't have zoning for it.
Yeah, and they said they didn't care.
And they said, that's...
It's their jurisdiction, and, it's...
And then they didn't answer the question about...
They didn't.
...the federal.
No, they just said, we're gonna issue these anyways, and we're not going to give you a hearing. It doesn't change anything from the standpoint of what folks can and can't do with a license in Clark County at this point.
All right. Well, we ought to draft up
exactly
something with additional rationale, leading off with the fact that marijuana is still an illegal substance.
So I
according
have
to federal law.
I have another spin on this because we've put a zoning in. If they were in compliance with federal law, so it's in limbo. Is that the reason they're going to issue the licenses versus the other side that if we just said, we're going to ban it completely?
They could still issue the licenses.
Okay, that was my question.
Or, yeah.
I, Go ahead.
Even though we banned it totally, they would still issue the license.
Right.
Well, not to, well, let me start over. The terminology that we use, it's important that we get it right or get it accurate, and that is that our primary objection to this is that it is against federal law. That's listed in the Controlled Substances Act, and if that's removed from the Federal Controlled Substances Act, there's nothing we could do that would somehow prohibit or remove the liberty of the people to use it. But I think it would, even though it's not going to change what things are at the county, I think it's important that we respond to this with a newly drafted letter that indicates that they did not address the most the primary concern as expressed by our sheriff's office, that it violates federal law. They haven't responded to it, and we want to be on record to indicate that they are issuing licenses in violation of federal law, and we cannot be party to that. So I would like to work with you to be able to help get that wording right.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. That's what we were hoping to get before.
And the question I brought up earlier, if somebody decides to go, David decides to go to Battleground and open up a pot shop out there, and you end up going to the sheriff, cease and desist, you're going to end up in court?
Well, if you're in a city, do all cities have...
No, that's not the point.
Dollar's corner primary.
He's in an example of
I'm talking
area.
In the county.
Okay, if
city, we don't have any control over. The county, you do.
In the county, you will end up as a code enforcement case, right, and we'll just take the proper actions against you, which would include stop work, cease and desist, lien your property. And
so then they appeal that, can end up in court, go through the process.
Wouldn't we recognize and treat it as an illegal substance?
Right.
So well,
we should.
Actually, if I understand correctly, neither the sheriff nor the code enforcement are authorized really to enforce federal law. That's federal authorities to do that. Our authority is limited to the enforcement of county law, and our definition of the zoning falls within that jurisdiction. Yeah. So within that jurisdiction, the code enforcement is the arm, not necessarily the sheriff's office, right? That would go out there and walk through the process and finally end up with a lien, which is the most severe that we can do, right?
Because it's a zoning issue.
Yeah. No, can we go beyond that?
No, I think we could get to a cease and desist,
under federal
eventually
statute.
The sheriff would become
we recognize
involved.
That still being illegal.
But our sheriff mm-hmm. isn't going to arrest anybody. If they're walking, if they have a authorized amount of marijuana on their person, they're not going to be arrested by our
that's
sheriff.
Not.
Well, the other two, store.
The other two problems, I think you got a violation of federal law by saying that it violates federal law, the substance thing. But you also have the voters of the state of Washington passed legally to sell pot, distribute pot in the state of Washington. Is the sheriff going to go out there and arrest somebody?
Well, and is a prosecuting attorney going to prefer charges?
And that's what you got to ask the question, David.
Well, actually, let's get a few basics here. One is that King County does not control Clark County.
No.
This failed in Clark County. It did not gain a majority in Clark County. And we, as representatives of the city of Clark County, are faithfully representing the will of the voters in Clark County when we say when we're consistent with that. But the sheriff is not getting involved to enforce federal law. The sheriff is just following up on the next steps beyond code enforcement. And if his role is not to arrest people at that point, his role is possibly to put a chain around the door, right? If we give them a cease and desist and they don't,
doesn't he take
right?
the same oath that we take?
So you better make sure that, Chris, you guys, whatever you do, you make sure that the thing is legal according to the prosecuting attorney's office and attorney mm-hmm. general, because, again, you don't want to end up with more
right.
legal stuff.
Good point. Good advice. Chris Horn and the sheriff's office need to weigh in
that's
on
right.
this and say
absolutely.
What's the appropriate steps to take because if we don't, we have an obligation to enforce the code, equal application of the law, without exceptions. We can't give favoritism.
So I think that, I say again, the sheriff took the same oath that we took to uphold federal law.
We should, yeah.
And if it's recognized as an illegal substance, the sheriff's going to have to make up his mind whether he's going to enforce the oath that he took.
Yeah, so before the sheriff gets involved, it really would be making sure that our own code enforcement team understands the normal processes for somebody who would violate the code, the county code, step one, two, three, and to the point where, if it gets to the point where the sheriff said, we ought to hear what the sheriff has to do, his position on this, yeah. What would he do?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, so, Chris Horn, I think there is a point at which it goes from code enforcement to the sheriff for enforcement, or mm-hmm. a combination thereof, where the sheriff would accompany someone, you know, if someone is not ceasing and desisting or stopping work
yeah.
with their business, and certainly the sheriff would probably get involved at that point. So we can walk through that process and say, hey, if this happens with one of these licenses being issued, what would the process be, and have the right people explain
so,
it.
Yeah,
so
the sheriff's office.
Do you think a joint work session?
No, it's just a conversation with the sheriff's office. So the question is, what would the sheriff do in violation of our code enforced our zoning laws when it escalates to the point where code enforcement has done all they can do and there's still a persistent violation.
Yeah.
And the reason
David,
I suggest
before that.
Yeah, we need
it's before that. We have to like
yeah.
we have a response back from the sheriff's office
yep.
if they're going to enforce federal law.
No. They don't need to enforce federal law. All they need to do their role is to enforce county law. And this is enough. If it violates county law, then they have measures to deal with that.
They take the same rules we take. To uphold
they have that same foundation.
Federal law.
Mm-hmm. Well, if somebody's standing on a street corner with a bag of cocaine, the sheriff can arrest them.
That's right. That's right.
And the reason they arrest them is because cocaine is a controlled substance on mm-hmm. the same list as marijuana at the federal level.
Well, but it's also in state law. So we probably need to get Chris up here to explain the difference.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
okay.
Controlled yeah. substances.
They adopt that by incorporation. However, now my assumption is in Washington State, marijuana is not on the state statute list anymore, which is why the prosecutor would not prosecute.
Because it's been legalized.
So we'll get somebody to explain.
Right, so there are three action items here. One is to ensure that code enforcement knows they are to enforce this county law. Two, make sure we get Chris Horn's opinion on this as to what the appropriate steps are. How do we responsibly deal with this? Three, we get the sheriff's office to respond and inform us as to make sure everybody's on board, so we're on the same page, so we know what. How do we navigate through these uncharted waters?
Yeah, and what his intentions are.
And four, a letter responding back to the state.
Yeah,
that's the independent one we already agreed to.
Yep.
That'd be interesting for the Attorney General. Of course, I think it still comes back is that they take an oath to uphold the laws of the United States of America. And if they are an elected official, same as we are, and regardless of what the state does, it's going to be a great question to ask all those candidates. But I'm sure.
down here is a campaign question.
So absolutely.
Sheriff.
Imagine this scenario. The sheriff arrests, the prosecuting attorney prefers charges, it goes to court, the judges convict, and then it's appealed up to the Supreme Court of the state of Washington.
We won't be alone. Right.
Well, that's where a bunch of agencies there that, pardon?
That's the way it'll go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And the federal people, what I watched on television, federal people in both Colorado and Washington aren't going to enforce the federal law on the people with the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. At least it puts them back on them. Our part is code enforcement.
There's got to be
interesting.
We should be working with WASAC on this because there are other counties that are in the same boat with us. And it wasn't Chelan, but it was the where was it? The little city south of them.
Wenatchee.
They are in a court case on this. In other words, there's a coalition of counties in the same boat with us that we ought to be able to make sure that we have a tight coalition to know that
this is a mess, because you have, inside the boundaries of Clark County, you have Vancouver, and I think they have a, they have a permit issued, and the city's going to allow them.
It's irrelevant.
The city already did. Well, but, Vancouver already did.
Now you have equal protection. I mean, the Constitution of the U.S. says that everybody ought to be treated the same. So a marijuana grower inside the city limits of Vancouver is safe and sound. If they try to do it in an unincorporated area, they're not. And
the complexities of unequal application of the law happen when you violate the foundations of government, and that's exactly what's happened here.
It's kind of like our next topic that we might want to move on to, that if I fire off a rocket on one side of my street, I'm okay. If I fire it off on the other side of the street, I'm not.
That's my neighborhood. I live where they can fire anything they want to fire, right across the street by neighbors in the city.
I just answered an email, and I said, it's interesting, and they were one. They said the same thing that I think that we're looking for when we ask for this information, and that is that we would like to be able to have one rule that matches as close as possible to all the incorporated areas so that it's easier to enforce.
That's going to be difficult because they're all over the board.
And I said that if possible.
I've got a direction forward, at least that Anna and I want to take on this, and that is that we want to contact John Dunaway, get a list of all the organizations that have got permits to sell fireworks this year, send them all a survey that would indicate, that would give them the opportunity to voice their A and B. A is the time period, the window of time for them to sell. B would be the window of time for those fireworks to be set off, and get all of that survey back to us. That would help us to be informed as to the ones that would be most affected by the sale of fireworks. Because it's important that we separate these out. I think it's important also that Commissioner Barnes, you weren't here when that was put on the ballot. Normally, ordinance changes ought to be thoughtful. There should be due diligence put into them. And I can tell there was zero dialogue in this, zero thought put into this. It was thrown out there, and none of us expected it to pass, and there it went. And it should not have been, it's problematic.
It says that we would look at it.
Did it? We
didn't
should.
Say we were going to restrict it. Well, didn't say we were going to lengthen it.
I have as an action item here to go get a copy of that advisory vote. But the thing is, now we have to untangle it, because we have A and B, selling time, setting off time. And we need to be able to hear from the citizens that we represent to make sure that we understand the pluses and minuses of both of those.
I just heard from
the fire marshal.
I just heard from a lady that lives.
He oversees the city.
No, this is an unincorporated area.
I just heard from a lady that lives out in Hazeldale. And they leave town. They take their dogs and cats with them. Mm-hmm. She said she invited me out. I'm going to go out between 5 and 1 o'clock the main night of the fireworks.
Is this like bring your own fireworks thing?
Because she said what happens in the Hazeldale, the bulk of the biggest fireworks stands are in the Hazeldale area that sell the most fireworks. And she said from the day the fireworks start, they've had the fireworks go off as early as 4:30 in the morning, and it starts continuously. Fireworks last all from 2 or 3 days ahead of time, and it lasts up until they run out of fireworks 2 days after fireworks are over. So anyway, I'm going to go out. She says, you just need to come out here. She said, I'll stay home for my vacation if you want to come out. And I said, no, you don't have to. Just take your vacation. I'll come out and listen to the fireworks. But I said it's the same way in most all the neighborhoods and that. So, but she says it's more so there than any place else. She said they went to Portland one time, driving back with a friend and family to come to town. They're driving back down I-5, and they could see all at night. They could see the whole sky lit up. And she bet her husband that was coming from the fireworks that was being shot off in the St. Helens area out there at Hazeldale. She said the whole sky was lit up, worse than down at Vancouver. But
I grew up on that mountain.
That's really clear. That's really clear.
Just west of Amboy.
Yeah.
And you can see the fireworks all across the region.
Yeah.
All the way into the air. Yeah. But
so that's the language in the advisory vote on fireworks. Yeah. It was, should we limit it to July 4th of every year and limit the sale to July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th?
So at this time, rather than us debate the merits of the selling time and the setting off time, really what's before us is what is the path forward to deliberate this and finally address it. And at this, so we just want to make sure we provide opportunity for the citizens to weigh in on this, and for us to be able to make sure that we consider both A and B, selling time, setting off time, and get it on the agenda. And it would probably be good to not push it out any further than necessary, because right after the 4th of July, people are going to be very tuned into this, and they're going to be more motivated than around Christmas time or something like that.
Well, New Year's, they set off a lot of fireworks for Vancouver. Well, New Year's, too.
Aside from that.
Yeah.
I think we should not restrict any greater than the city of Vancouver, nor any other incorporated area.
Well,
Vancouver is like one day.
Vancouver sells for 3 days. Vancouver actually does exactly what the advisory vote says.
So,
the
advisory vote doesn't say 3 days.
Well, it says fire them off on the 4th only and sell only on July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Oh, advisory vote.
This is.
That's just discharge. I'm sorry. I thought I was going to explain a little bit.
We need both. This is B. We need A.
Correct. Right. This is kind of what I came up with on the discharge.
Do you have an A?
And because the reason I did that was because last time we didn't seem as concerned with the sale.
That's my main concern.
Well, no, I knew you wanted to keep that longer.
The big objections of the nonprofits that we heard during the work session were the selling days. Yeah, they don't want the selling days to be limited.
I thought we wanted to focus on the amount of days discharged.
And so this really is what's at issue, is firing them off.
Because this advisory vote addresses both. We need to be able to inform ourselves of both and offer the specific feedback from survey from all of the affected businesses and nonprofits that have obtained licenses this year to ensure that we are informed to make an informed choice.
Okay, is that the board's direction then?
I'm already on path to do that. Is that and and I certainly welcome. Is that okay with you guys?
I wouldn't want to do anything. With the information in front of me, I can make my decision now. So I'm not quite sure what you think those people selling fireworks are going to
say. Well, the process for changing the ordinance requires a formal notice and deliberation and a hearing, and we make the choice after that process occurs. Going into that, I have a preference as well, but I want to reserve my final decision until after I hear from each of the affected organizations and all the citizens that are going to come forward and help us to make their appealing, compelling arguments.
I think I've had fireworks going out where I live for a week. Started a week ago. None of those were bought here. we could cut off all the buy-in days, and I'll still have fireworks out there, because they're bought on the reservation.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All we do is take away the ability for the nonprofit organizations to purchase.
We have a lot of time on this. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, we do.
And a survey by our fire marshal wouldn't be a tremendously difficult thing to do. So are you okay with asking
but
John?
I would add something to that, Dave.
Sure.
Tom, I think that since each one of these cities are located within the county, and they have set up their process, why don't we ask the fire marshal to check with them to see what their complaints have been, what their response is.
That's a good idea.
The people within, so the people can't say you just looked at the county you're looking at county, state, countywide, including the city.
Commissioner Barnes, I have communicated with Battleground, Ridgefield, and LaCenter. Camas and Washougal have already limited what they do, so I didn't contact them. But Battleground so far has not had any conversations about a reduction in the amount of days. Ridgefield and LaCenter have not gotten back to me yet. I've left messages, so hopefully today I'll hear from them. Now, I'm not sure they're aware or interested or know, but when if you look at the precinct, the incorporated precincts, it looks as though most of the incorporated precincts voted for the advisory vote too. So that may be something over the course of this year that their council members become aware of or look at. But you know, it does look like most of the incorporated precincts around the county in those areas.
But you're going to show everybody, Axel, that you incorporate everybody in the process if you're going to
Axel, what you indicate here is what's going to go on next year for the city of Vancouver?
No, what I indicate here is what's happening this year. And to answer Commissioner Bedore's concern about when the sales occur, if you just look at that column that says July 2nd, fill in the boxes to the left, that's pretty much what happens. Basically, there's a lot more days of sale than there is of discharge. Well, so
I'm looking at Vancouver, and it has no sales.
Well,
this is just
discharge.
And that was discharge.
This was Commissioner Bedore's concern.
Okay. Please get us another list that shows the sailing time.
Yeah, and like I said, what it's going to look a lot of like is that all the boxes will be filled in more or less, except mm-hmm. for in Vancouver, they only allow 3 days sell. So it would just be July 2nd, 3rd, 4th. But all the rest would probably have the boxes.
So action items going forward on this. One, survey the affected organizations. To get a paper like this. Thank you very much for this, for the sale times. Three, ask John Dunaway to be able to give us his feedback from the fire marshal's point of view. Four, get feedback from our sheriff's office, because they're the ones out there enforcing this, on each of these. Give us some guidance. What's their insight? And of course, the other one is to invite all the citizens to be able to weigh in on this. And people feel passionately both sides of this issue, so it's important that we allow that opportunity for them to be heard.
What night do you want to hear from them?
And of course, Ridgefield and Battleground allow them to choose.
The thoughtful process that will finally end up with a date for a hearing, and it may be more than one date. Will unfold after we walk through these other steps, I would think. So it's going to be progressive.
May I ask what method of surveying the public you would like employed?
I think he's done. Are you done already?
Not yet. Well, of course, the obvious one is we have to have a public hearing. But there's other ways we can get feedback, and the more opportunities we can provide for the public to weigh in on this, the better.
Oliver is contracting with a company called Peak Democracy, and they've got a very nice online tool that allows people to engage in online surveys and forums where people can actually talk back and forth between each other about various subjects. That might be a very good.
What's it cost?
Pardon?
What's it cost?
It was like $10,000.
Come on.
Yeah. And it's...
Unlimited.
That's
oh, you mean it's already paid for, we can use it for this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's... So I'm zero for this.
Better already, yeah.
See the dollar sign.
Marginal cost.
See the
in
dollar
other words,
signs.
We cash in on that
David.
Already yeah. paid for investment, zero so, cost. That's the right answer.
So this would be...
Sure.
This would be a good way to get... substantial input.
I agree. And we have to be, what we ought to do is make sure that we don't lead have leading questions, but we ought to make sure that we provide an objective way for people to answer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, ask the city manager for each of these cities. So
the people that write these surveys, they're trained in how to come up with neutral questions so that you don't bias your results.
Well, that's good. Good. I like that idea.
I think we're going to have a hearing in Yakult.
Yeah, they'll bring their fireworks to the hearing.
That's right.
At 10 o'clock in the morning.
So that sounds like a good suggestion. There's an online tool that we can provide here at the county for people to electronically weigh in.
Yeah, it's called Open Town Hall.
So do they like a questionnaire that they fill out? Or
Well, it's actually a website, and we would advertise
point
it.
To it.
Yeah.
And I even point my Facebook to it.
Yep. Constituents want to participate in civil online forums, and there are rules of behavior. And
that sounds great.
And Oliver gave a briefing on this to the management team, and some were very enthusiastic about it, and some weren't.
The lady that talked to me today, a couple of them, she doesn't have a problem with the 4th of July. They could shoot off all the fireworks alone the 4th of July. It's just the coming up to the 4th of July where they have the problem.
Yeah.
And some people go to the reservations like Tom's referring to. They go up there to Chehalis, Centralia, and they buy things that are almost like an atomic bomb that they bring down here and shoot them off all over.
Yeah, we have to be, I agree, we have to be careful because if we basically get to the point where it's not practical, you can't buy them here in the county, then you're going to have more people going to Indian reservations where they're going to sell things that are way outside the limits of legality, and you're going to have them proliferate more in the county here. It'd be worse than ever.
Yeah,
at least here we can sell the safe and sane brands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the lady's worried about the bulk of the fireworks. Major stands are all right in Hazeldale.
Permit to sell the bulk of the fireworks.
Welcome to Clark County Unincorporated.
Well, the city could always take it over. You could always give it to the city, and then that way they could comply with the city fireworks.
Well, let the free market prevail, right?
Yeah, okay, sure. Okay.
I thought about taking over the city.
Okay, I think we have a number of to-dos on this as well.
Yeah, we want to make sure we have two separate questions that would nail down the selling time. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The setting off time. Great.
My personal opinion is they shot them off every day. I love fireworks. I don't have a problem with it.
That reminds me.
But that's.
I think it's.
But I know it's not practical, David.
If you want to see what is out there on the market, our fire marshal is setting them off at the fairgrounds. I've been invited to go see.
Yeah.
Of course, they have to buy the real big ones, and you know, yeah. It's like that's part of my job.
I talked to a guy last night, and I mentioned the axle this morning that David Nordenberg is going to meet with Joe, and that I talked to him when he gets back from Florida on the 7th of July.
Joe Levesque.
But you know why he's going to Florida with a family reunion? He's going down there so they can shoot off all the fireworks they want.
Is Florida wide open?
So yeah, it's wide open. They enjoy
are we
fireworks.
Having the big fort fireworks this year?
Yeah. I am.
I mean, like we have the city, like the biggest ones west of this Mississippi.
Yeah, there'll be 40,000 or 50,000 people down there.
Yeah, okay.
Who's putting that on now?
Huh?
Who put that on down here?
The Fort Vancouver Trust.
Okay, so start the presses in process, right? Get her done. Okay. Thank you.
The Historic Preservation Grant Program is also mine. I'm handing out a budget sheet. I don't expect you to...
Could you sign that for me, please?
Memorize it or understand it perfectly. I'll explain it to you. What's going on is, as you guys know, every year you've got a committee. One commissioner chairs the committee with Greg Kimsey, our auditor. The Historic Preservation Grants Program was started with a change in state legislation, which basically every time there was a transaction, something was recorded in the auditor's office, real estate transaction, $1 was peeled off to go to the preservation of historical things in Clark County, the promotion of that. It's a fun group. I think it's a good program. We give away a lot of little grants each year. Last year we gave away five. The year, 2 years before that, we were able to give a few more away. The committee reviews the grants, scores them, makes a recommendation to the board, and each fall as part of the budget process, you guys approve those grants. What's going on right now, every year at this time, we gear back up to send out the press release announcing the program and asking for grant applications over the summer so they can be reviewed in the fall. We're kind of right on the bubble. I've talked with Sandra Hall in the auditor's office, and I've talked with Greg Kimsey, and I think the three of us are in agreement that, like 2 years ago, with the economy where it was, we should probably hold the program over this year. And so that's our recommendation, and I'll explain why. We've got
Sandra's anticipating we'll have about $76,000 left in the account at the end of the year. Each year, as you know, out of this account, we give $50,000 to the Historical Museum in four quarterly payments. So out of that $76,000 to start the year, right away we will cut a check, dropping that down a little bit lower to the museum, and then we'll have cash flow come in as revenue throughout the year. So we're fine with making the payment, the planned payment to the Historical Museum, and we would probably be fine with our revenue projections to have a very small or low year program. You know, maybe we could get away with $30,000-$40,000 and still have enough. You know, we always want to be safe and have enough in the tank to have a reserve so we're not in a cash flow problem. But I think looking at it, we did this a couple years ago and it'd probably be better this year. Hold it over, accrue the fund balance, and have a bigger, more robust, better program next year in 2016. So that's the recommendation. I needed to talk to you about it and have you okay or approve it or make a decision. Like I said, we can go either way, but it would be a much smaller program this year, and I think it'd probably be better off to let it accrue.
Okay, questions. I got two questions.
Yep.
One, the board, you said there's a commissioner that sits on that board. Which commissioner sits on that board?
Well, we actually, it's a timely question, which I should have tagged on when I said that, because it was Commissioner Stewart, and so we need somebody to be part of that group. And that group meets in the fall.
Oh, they meet how many times?
Usually two times in relation to reviewing the grants. So usually the commission, once we met out at the lodge, but for instance, we would meet in here. If it was you, Commissioner Menard called the meeting to order. Everyone hopefully would have reviewed their grants, because I send all the grant packets out about 2 weeks ahead of time, so you get that grant packet with all the grant applications and your score sheet. You score them, you come to the meeting prepared, we get the chart out, and everybody, we start talking about how people scored them and feel about each grant, and then we make our selections for recommendation to the full board. And so there's two elected officials on there. There would be you and Mr. Kimsey.
So, go ahead, can you say something?
I do.
Oh.
We do two things in the giving of the museum down here. We give them from the county, and then we also give it to society, and the society, as noted here, qualifies the museum for their special projects. So
correct.
not only do we give them the $100,000 in the past, we also turn around and give them another $50,000 through the grant.
Over 2 years, that's correct. Yep, we get $50,000 a year, and they pretty much average about $20,000-$25,000 in grants a year. So about $75,000.
I would rather have it one way or the other. I don't think we should be given some here and some here. I think we should come up and say, very easily to follow, this is what we contribute to the museum.
Yeah. Mark and I had a meeting, and we had a work session, and we talked with their board and Susan before she left about finding a way to either, one, help increase their budget, or two, at the very least, make their budget more flexible. And, you know, I think we're committed to doing that, but they're already funded out of this fund at $50,000 a year. With the revenue situation being what it is, and this used to bring in more money, and it probably will again, it would be my hope, but you know, we used to probably have close to double the revenue we did out of this when we were in the housing bubble.
And this is from recording fees, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, we used to pay the museum out of just straight general fund. We moved them into this fund during the recession, and that's where they've stayed. I'm totally open to having that discussion with the board on where we want to go. This is just in relation to that grant program.
So do all the cities contribute to this? I thought I saw a breakdown of
Vancouver
this.
Vancouver does. I don't know about
I'm thinking
the small
ones.
Vancouver
did.
Contributes, I think, $75,000 a year.
Yeah, and they own the building. And
they maintain it.
Yeah. So I think it definitely should be a partnership way along the way. And be more distinctive and clear as to what we contribute rather than little pieces along the way. Because
well, their contract, we have a 2-year agreement with them, and that's coming up for renewal. And so we'll be bringing you a proposal.
Yeah. So, excuse me, I'll be finished. How far has our fees dropped from where they were. And so what you're saying is that we're down to $76,000 for a total?
That's what we, with the expected grants to flow out of the account and payments to the museum, combined with revenue coming in, that's where we expect to be at, in December, is at $76,000. That's what we'll have in the bank.
That didn't count the $75,000, was $100,000.
It does account for that. That's with paying the museum their $50,000, and that's with... That's what we have starting fund balance. And again, we're projecting
76,405.
We're projecting to start the 2015 year with $76,000.
Yeah, you can see right here at the top, revenue in 2013 was $118,433. Through 27 May, it's only $32,000. So we might only get $70,000 in revenue this year, which is down substantially from 2013 and from
I just want to be very cautious as to what we take from the general fund, because we're fragile.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you got Bob Stevens guarding the door.
And so, good guy. So you were talking about making payments, and that's what shows down here for the Clark County Historical Society encumbrance?
Yeah, and so I have to watch the cash flow in this account as well, and I have help from Lisa in the budget office and Sandy, but... So what will happen, so I have $76,000 in the account to start January 1st, right? What typically will happen is we'll cut a quarterly check to the museum, so I think that's like 50,000 divided by 4. We cut that check right out of the gate, so let's say we got 50,000 then in the bank. And then the historical museum, especially with these digitalization projects, those are always ready to go. So Susan was very good about it. She's like, January 2nd, hey, give me that $25,000. I want to work with WSU and get going on digitalization. So now, you know, I'm down to $25,000 in that account, mm-hmm. and I've got to manage cash flow for the rest of the grants and the quarterly payments to the museum, which is why I'm saying I think a cautionary approach that Sandy and Mr. Kimsey and I talked about was let's hold it over again. You know, it's nice to be able to have at least $100,000 or a little more in the tank, because we do have to make those quarters.
So if we suspend the grant program for a year,
we'll accrue an extra $70,000.
Take a look at the fund balance at the end of 2015, make a decision regarding a grant program in 2016.
Yeah.
And if revenues rebound, then we can, or if the fund balance is healthy enough, we can put the grant program back together.
Yeah, I would like to have a better readout of this. Okay. I mean, I think what we show here, we show the county's portion of it. You don't show anybody else's here?
This is just county funds.
What I should have done is printed the email that Sandra sent, because she explains it a heck of a lot clearer than she does.
I would like to see a picture of the whole thing to make sure that we understand where we are.
So you want to see the budget, revenue budget for the museum, the expense budget, who's paying in?
Yeah, I want to do no less than anybody else.
Okay.
And make sure that we're solid. You know,
Well, and I think if we hold over the program this year, that allows us to look at what's going on with the museum and talk with their board. You know, at that work session, you guys were very supportive of working with them on making sure that they were taken care of. And so, you know, that would allow us to accrue some cash while we make maybe some more significant decisions about our support or where we go with the museum in the future.
So what's the carryover? The carryover is the 76th.
That's what's anticipated. So right now, what we have, right now, if you were to go to the account, it's going to tell you you got $31,000 that's unencumbered. Nobody's accounted for it. Nobody's asked for it. That's money you got. And if you calculate and project what we anticipate every month to make in revenue, we end up with the $76,000 December 31st is what we're predicting.
Predicting from the $1 fee.
Correct. That's what the revenue is going to leave us with is $76,000. But what I have to anticipate is typically on January 2nd, I cut a check for $12,000 and I cut a check for $25,000 almost immediately, plus any other grantees that are on the ball and want to collect their check early. So I have to watch that. It takes a big dip at the front of the year and then I start making revenue. And that's kind of what we're nervous about. If we have a program next year, we're not going to be able to have a very big one because we won't be able to support it with the cash flow monthly.
Yeah, and the 12.5 we give to the museum every 3 months is absolutely necessary for them to make payroll.
Benefits.
That's the $75,000.
That's
the 50.
That's part of the
50,000. So we're guaranteeing them $50,000
a year
by contract.
Yeah,
that's our contract.
Yeah, and they, you know, when we met with the board members, you know, they talked about their staff. They've got master's degrees, they're highly educated, and they get just a little bit over minimum wage and no health benefits.
Well,
they work them less than 29 hours.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I know about the museum. David knows about the museum, too. David had a question he wanted to ask, but I want to make some comments when we
I want to make sure that we're not shortchanged from the way they can't operate.
I think you would be if you cut the money.
Yeah, and so as we go forward, I want that fair board or the museum board to make sure that we have equal players here and that we're not finding ourselves on the short side of it. Because I think that, you know, it has some real value to our community. And we can't be the only ones funding it either. So
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know a little bit more about the structure. There is a governing board, or is it an advisory board?
It's an advisory board.
It's an advisory board. So the advisory board creates the criteria and then recommends which grants to fund.
Correct.
And then those decisions come back to the commissioners to decide.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. How many people are on that board?
I think it's got 8, and you know the criteria. So I have that in the office, but you know, typically it's someone who, you know, represents. So we have someone from the trust or someone from historicals, mm-hmm. you know, people that represent different.
They got somebody kind of from the county, somebody from the city mm-hmm. on it.
Good.
Yeah.
If there's supposed to be a commissioner on that board, there ought to be a commissioner.
Yeah. Steve. This is the first thing we've done.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time of year when I send the press release out asking for the grants.
Well,
we don't meet until the fall, so I hadn't really prioritized
I understand the automatic process that's been there, but if a commissioner hasn't been actively involved in this, I feel like we're not fulfilling our responsibilities. Because we could be nearsighted for this one little thing, and the grant applications go out to a certain traditional places and leave others out. And the reason I want to make sure that we consider the big picture here is one of the other agenda items we have here is the Pearson Air Museum and the possibility of that being stewarded by transferred to the county. We don't know what the financial plus or minuses are going to be on that, and it is a historic kind of a category as well. It's part of our identity, like Officers Row, and it may be that right now that's a possibility for approving, including them on the list potentially in the future.
I would typically send the press release out right now. Whoever applies. Anyone that calls me and wants to sit down about it, I sit down with them. People that want me to come out and do visits, I try to do that. Talk about, you know, and then the tough part, like all processes, is when folks don't get recommended for a grant, talking through how they can strengthen it next year, put in a better application. I do those kind of things. But what you need to know and what you guys already know, the Board of Commissioners directs all these funds, just like every fund almost in the county. You can spend this money on whatever you want. This was the program that was created after the law changed, you know, a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, they came up with some criteria and a good way to try to put this money out into the community for historical preservation. But you could spend all this money on the museum, or you could spend all this money on everything else. It's up to you.
Yes, and thank you very much for your work. And you do so many different things. A lot of it we're still discovering.
And this is one that I didn't expect to do when I got hired here.
Yeah,
sort of like,
so I appreciate that. And also the support and the good work that Historic Society has done. And I know that the labor unions have had a significant role in helping to make that successful, and just the extra work that's been done there at that building this last year is just incredible. Very, very good. The press. What I'm afraid, though, is that we're getting ahead of the process. A press release is going to say something. It's going to draw a predefined criteria. It's going to go to a limited list. It, all of that, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If we're supposed to be involved in that process as commissioners, we ought to participate in that process. And when are these grants supposed to be decided?
So typically, the press release will go out. Like I said, it varies week to, you know, by a few weeks every year. But I would send it out the end of this month, so this week, next week, saying we're soliciting grant applications. Please send them to me. I would compile those, and usually the cutoff date is September 1. We usually have 2 to 3 meetings between the middle and early November because we try to coordinate it with the board's budget process. And so, and what I would do is, so after September 1, that's the drop-dead date. I've got all of the grant applications. I make, you know, 8 copies of them. I mail a packet out to each of the members. Drop one off. In that case, I dropped it off to Commissioner Stewart and Mr. Kimsey. We all scored and, you know, did our own review, and then we meet to try to decide which ones to recommend to the board.
And then the grants become, what do you call it, approved, so that the funds start, they get approved at what date?
They get approved, so...
It's for the next year, right? January 2015.
So,
right?
Like, if we did it this year, yes, we would be approving grants for 2015.
Yep.
They would need to be approved late November, early December, which typically, so I just do it like a staff report, and it would be on your guys' consent agenda.
So, the remainder of this year is going just simply the bookkeeping of sending the checks out. They have been pre-committed because of the grants that have already been pre-approved. And then after the end of this year, there is nothing approved, right?
Well, that, so.
Yet.
Both those things are true in this sense. I've got 5 grants that I have to coordinate this year. They'll come in and request a check from me, and then they have a certain amount of time to complete the grant, and they have to fill out a finalization sheet. They call it Attachment A, what they spent the money on, and everything. They have to close the grant out.
So that's bookkeeping.
That's for this year.
We're
talking about these people.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. In other words,
for next year, what I am suggesting is that we do not do the process this year because of the cash flow situation. We let the revenue for the rest of this year and next year accrue.
So next year, a commissioner would be in place, taking Steve Stewart's place in order to be part of the process.
For the 2016.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Because we can't afford grants.
This year
for next year.
I think we could be. It'd just be a lot less.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a small program.
Maybe a small program is better than none at all.
You going to say something?
Yeah. The only thing that I could say is that that they've requested for about the last year, asked me to serve on the historical board down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the building trades, like David brought up, the building trades went out of their way in order to completely renovate that building. The city come to me, the mayor did, and we put roofs on it. We put new electrical system in it. Whether David knows it or not, I think that he contributed a $7,000 contribution to the Historical Society, which put part of the new floor, all that new flooring that's in there, that went part of David's money. The electrical workers paid for all the electrical contractors paid for all of the electrical equipment. The roofers paid for all the roofing and the roofing contractors, so they didn't have any money. Susan has done one hell of a job of pulling the historic museum together. They've had 3 fundraisers I've been involved in and pushing for people to raise the funds, and Robin White basically beat David over the head to get the $7,000 to
actually for, no I I was
at the
way
table.
Ahead of it, and I volunteered that and cut that check right away, and then the union brothers and sisters stepped up to do another really good thing in exchange.
Anything that you can do, that Historical Society was there before Pearson Air Park was there.
Mm-hmm.
And all the history, you go down there and look at the humanities of history that's in that building, and they would like to eventually buy
the property next door, the guy said that he would sell him the property, but he wants his money up front, mm-hmm. and that, and they do need it because they got stuff warehoused, they got stuff everywhere that the public here needs to see. That's been mm-hmm. collected over the years, and I, mm-hmm. I think that anything we could do to help the Humane Society, mm-hmm. If the city and Pearson Air Park, whatever you want to call it, the Park Service, finally get their act together one way or the other. It's they're negotiating against each other. I think the Park Service is demanding too many strings. I think the city's told them we're not going to buy those strings. And I think the county, if you look at what they want out of the process, David, probably the us county commissioners will probably tell them go fly a kite too. I mean, they want a whole lot of things. Originally, if they would have agreed with the historic trust down there, the building would have already been under the historic trust. We wouldn't be in this thing. All the equipment, the planes, everything would have still been in there. But the lady come on board and try to enforce the law 100%, and I know that Jamie Herrera and all these other people have been doing their thing, and that's later discussion. But again, the historic trust, the building down there for the Clark County Historic Building has been there for a long time before Pearson Air Park ever got put mm-hmm. in place. So I anything we can do to help them, keep them out. And if you have to not give out grants this year in order to build the fund of David, that's what we ought to do. We ought to go with that. Then next year, if it's you or Tom or whoever the new commissioner is, you're going to be part of the process. Mm-hmm. I won't be here. Mm-hmm. But somebody will. A commissioner will be sitting there. Somebody mm-hmm. from the city sits on it. Mm-hmm. So, and I might be sitting there, but not as a commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Fort Vancouver Trust help pay for the Air Museum?
They what?
Didn't the Fort Vancouver Trust help pay for the Air Museum?
They put a lot of money into it, but the city of Vancouver, basically, Royce Pollard is the one that originally...
We have this on our agenda item a little bit later. So if we could nail down
anyway,
the...
That's,
so I want to...
We don't know anything. It still belongs to the federal government.
Well, we'll get there. For now, the obligations that have already been committed, the grants that have already been approved, are to be honored, and you're ensuring that you're just following through on those and issuing the checks and make sure the bookkeeping is up to snuff, right?
Correct. So, yep. So okay. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different.
So there's no choices to be made. Nope. Those decisions were made, and it's just a matter of fulfilling those obligations.
Yep.
Okay. And normally, this time of year, the letters would go out inviting grant applications, but because of the fund balance is as low as it is, suggestion that you're making, and that I think that we're all have consensus for, is to pass on those grant applications this year and let the fund balance climb up to be something where you could do something a little more significant. Are we on the same page?
I don't care.
Okay.
That is our recommendation. And I think there is a serious conversation that you have been having and that we probably need to continue about kind of where we go with Historical Society or the museum or potentially the next conversation, Pearson Air Museum. But if we accrue those revenues over the next year, that may help with whatever decision you
take. Well, you know, I guess I have a little bit of a problem of putting it in the bank and just leaving it there. And a good example is Selachie Prairie Railroad.
Yeah.
They are preserving the property of Clark County.
That's very true. And
they've done it on a shoestring. And I noticed that their budget has been cut in half, but the photography program for the museum is fully funded. And sometimes you've got to go back and say, you know, if it's an asset that belongs to the county, you better take care of it or you won't have it.
That's the role of the advisory board. Please don't interrupt. Mark, do you know if the advisory board, if this is one of those that's listed in our newly organized list?
It's there.
It's already,
okay, so
already
arranged. So the decisions, the agenda, the minutes are there.
No.
What? No?
No, I mean, I have those for last year and this year in a,
okay.
in a file.
Do we have them? It's just a matter of putting them in there?
Yeah.
Okay. What did they recommend for this year? That the advisory board came, the process would be represent the advisory board to the commissioners and suggest and tell us what you guys preferred? What was that outcome?
For the grants?
Should we send out? Are you recommending that those letters do go out or they don't go out?
That actually is a good, that's a fair question, is should we take this financial decision to the full advisory board? Now, typically I've used the advisory board to vet and score the grants, but I mean, that could certainly be your direction, and I thought about that before I came in today. Should I call a meeting with the advisory board and ask them what they want to do?
That would be, I would think, a really important role for the advisory board to evaluate this and look at all the different options and then come back with a recommendation whether or not those letters ought to, those invitations ought to go out,
sure,
or whether or not
that
ought to be built up.
So I think I understand that the grants have already been decided upon.
But he's talking for next year.
To finish out this year.
Yeah.
And next year we're going to ask them to chime in on whether to hold or just give smaller grants.
Being that a commissioner should be sitting on there, and that was Steve Stewart, Ed, would you like, Commissioner Barnes, would you like to be able to fulfill that role and jump into the advisory board and help bring back a recommendation?
He won't be here after November.
This is for this year.
Well, but they need to get together now to talk about the grant program and whether or not to send letters out.
Sure.
So that's a yes?
I vote for yes.
Okay. That's a good process. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's the right way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do that and then bring it back to the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the one agenda item would be determine whether or not applications ought to go out this year or build it up.
Right.
Okay. Great, and so you are officially a member of that advisory board now.
All right.
Commissioner Barnes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Pearson Air Museum. I am looking at a May 19th update from the National Park Service. And the title of it is National Park Service Continues Progress and Innovation at Pearson Air Museum. It says the National Park Service continues its commitment to the success of Pearson Air Museum and to working in cooperation with the many volunteers, partners, community leaders, local businesses, et cetera, et cetera. The Park Service has put together a staffing plan to effectively operate Pearson Air Museum and has identified a full-time museum manager who will be transitioning into the position in July of this year. More information will be made available next month. In addition, park guides and additional volunteer docents, whatever that is, will enliven the museum for visitors with guided tours and interactive programs. It doesn't appear as though the museum is up for sale. So
it's still being pushed and considered back in Washington, D.C.
Could be, but I mean, they're hiring people.
Can you forward that to us?
Mm-hmm. We'll do.
I met with Congresswoman Herrera's office this morning on this. The original plan was to transfer that to the City of Vancouver, and City of Vancouver had provided letters of support. They'd be willing to testify and be on behalf of that process and all. And after that was presented by Congresswoman, it completely reversed, and so they got the rug pulled out. They're not interested. That is an option for the county to be one of those jurisdictions, the only other jurisdiction that they could possibly transfer it to. So at this point, it would be the natural steps for us to take would be to evaluate what would be involved if the county was to be a steward over this very important part of our Clark County identity. So it would be a little bit of research on the part of our staff. We ought to make sure that we have, if this is worth at least finding out about, we got to have two votes on this to be able to say, hey, staff, go find out the answers. How much was the revenue in the past? What kind of activities were there in the past? Be able to go research that. And also our public works would be the natural ones to provide the maintenance because there's 7 acres plus of grounds that need to be maintained. They would give us some kind of an idea of what it would cost to actually maintain the grounds. And their third one would be to have some kind of a manager to oversee and coordinate all of the events. So that research can be done and brought back to us. And our Congresswoman's office wants to know whether or not we're interested, and at least finding out those answers and then informing them if we are. And we would know until staff can inform us of those things.
Yeah, this is very informative. The National Parks team of museum specialists is actively redesigning and enhancing exhibits in the museum, as well as acquiring new exhibits. Likewise, interpretive programs developed last year will be continued, along with a staggered launch of new educational opportunities.
We call that fluff.
Well, it might be a really good thing.
And there are two people that I can call.
The county has never played a role in the Air Museum before.
No.
Never has. It's been a private group in the city of Vancouver and the Vancouver
Trust. Vancouver Trust run it for years and years until they got into a battle. But you got airplanes down there. You got airplane hangars. No, you still got them. They're sitting in the hangars.
They emptied it.
They're in the hangars.
I'm talking about the museum itself.
Oh, the museum, they took them out of there.
Right.
But they're still in the hangars there at Pearson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that all those historic planes and that.
Well,
but my thing is, David, is there's a fight going on between the Park Service and the City of Vancouver. It's all about negotiations. And I don't know whether the commission wants to, until after you maybe meet with some of these people, get their input before we want to stick our nose into it. Would be like the county or the city saying that they want to take over the Clark County Fairground.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So I mean,
let me respond, because we talked about that this morning. This is not an adversarial position at all. Yeah, the city of Vancouver. We ought to find out from them if they have any interest at all.
Absolutely, they do.
Right. If they have any interest, then we would yield to them and say, hey, we respect that. Go ahead. And if you feel like you can go ahead and do what you want to do, you have first. You're naturally the first one that we respect. The second part of this is that the Park Service, this is not a hostile takeover by Clark County over the Park Service. This would be an invitation from Clark County to the Park Service that would invite them to be able to transfer this asset to our local community for the stewardship. And they may prefer to do that. We don't know until we engage with them on a conversation.
But are you going to annex, is the county going to annex 7 acres within the site of the city? Or are you going to file a right of domain to try to take over the 7 acres? What's the process that you're going to have to go through?
You know what I'm afraid of, Ed, is that we're getting in the middle of something. They've been negotiating for a year.
Yeah.
And if we were to get in the middle of it, we would muddy some waters here.
Find out what the
at least maybe the most we should do would be touch base with the city to see where they are and what they're doing. I don't want to jump in the middle.
No, nobody wants to jump into anything if there's some ongoing negotiations, but to be able to determine the path forward. One would be to get some kind of an indication from a letter or something from the city of Vancouver that would indicate whether or not they're done or if they're still trying to proceed with something. If they're done and they are walking away, then we end up with the National Park Service being in charge of this local asset.
They're in the middle of this. And in fact, I thought we gave a letter of support for the city requesting support from the Federal Park Department in behalf of the city of Vancouver. And didn't we do that?
We almost did.
Oh, we almost did.
We were working
they
on
didn't get it,
did
they?
I talked to the city about it, and they were...
That's an email.
They didn't need our help.
It just didn't make sense.
So at this point, all of this has to be based on goodwill. None of it can be some kind of adversarial relationship or some kind of hostile takeover. So it really has to do with asking the city of Vancouver their status and yielding to them if they prefer to move forward with something. If they have reached an end and say, we're done, and and yet we have one of the strongest organized passionate coalition of people who care about that museum, that they want that to make to be an important part of our identity. We should pay attention to that by asking questions to see what can we do to accommodate that. That's what this is about.
I think we should also reach out. They have a curator.
Yes, we should reach out to the National to because the Park Service. Because
this leads me to believe that the National Park Service is committed to running that site as a viable, attractive museum. And if that's the case,
well, the problem
we should let them do that.
The owners of those airplanes were given no guarantee that they would remain the owner of their airplanes.
Right.
And that's what they were looking for. Is it's
and they didn't
their
belong to
investment.
Them. They were donated, and the people that donated them said we want them back. Let me ask you a question, David. Mm-hmm. I honestly think, and hindsight is always better than sometime, but maybe a lot of this stuff with the emails like that and the phone calls and the people that are coming in and out from people would have been better handled if you would have come and said the. Whether it's me sitting here and Tom has said, hey, I've had a conversation with Jamie Herrera. How do the commissioners feel about looking into this? So it would have been consensus. But people say, is David's Facebook the official notice of the Clark County commissioners, or is the county website the official notice? Or some people are upset because they think that the friction between the city and the county, and this is a way for, like I say, the phone calls and the people have made the conversation. That letter is one indication of it. But I think it would have been better if the three of us would have got together and you'd have said, hey,
talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, talked it over first and that. And like I say, you know, I'm talking hindsight. But again, it would have been, I think, more appropriate. And then when you look at this, I was not aware of this stuff on the email here from the Park Service, David, at all. Mm-hmm. Never seen that, never knew anything. All I know is that I've been involved in it. I spent a lot of money, done a lot of time. We donated a lot of electrical work down there in all those buildings to mm-hmm. keep the upgrade on them. Mm-hmm. Did Dancing with the Stars down there.
Won my trophy.
All that kind of
dance
stuff.
Up a storm.
But I do know that there's a lot of friction going on between the Park Service, and it never happened until the lady showed up,
mm-hmm. yep.
and she decided she was going to go with the.
I think maybe she might have got orders from up above.
Oh, yeah. So the National Park Service and so Elstrom and them, the Historic Reserve mm-hmm. down there, said, we're out of here. So they pulled everything out of there, and all the people that donated their stuff for years.
They had just a few days to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Less than 24 hours.
They were not kind at all.
But I don't want more.
Let's work with the city and find out what the city's doing.
Okay, but let me inform you of what has transpired. The city originally supported that. At the last minute, they pulled out. And the day after I learned that, I called Steve Hordenstein, who is a member of the trust, and asked him what's the scoop. And he said, we're done. No, actually, I'm sorry. He said, there's still a possibility to give us a little more time, so weeks of time. And so I just waited because maybe they can work something out. I met Steve Hordenstein several weeks ago. And at that point, he basically said, we're done. There's no moving forward. But he's very interested, and there's a lot of passionate people that would love to be able to see that be a local resource where our community can define how that resource can best engage with us, and that they would be very interested to transfer that to Clark County. At that point, I called Jamie Herrera's office and asked them if that was a viable alternative. They indicated yes, it was. They're interested in that. And so the first thing I do is I ask questions. I ask those questions, and I also then went and asked the questions of our own community. And not as an official announcement from that we're going to do this or that. It was if you go back to my Facebook page, it was a question: are you interested in this? Should we even look into it? And there was a lot of response, very positive, saying, yes, we are interested. We'd like to be able to enthusiastically encourage you to look into it. So from there, I asked more questions this morning of Herrera's office. And they're very interested to know at this point where I am coming together with my fellow commissioners and say, at this point, we don't know enough. we need to be able to ask questions of the city, of the National Park Service, of our staff, of the owners of those assets, the airplanes, and those individuals and organizations to find out what is the path forward best for our community. So all these are question asking. And once we determine what those answers are, then we'll be more informed to know, is there an appropriate direction or a role for the county at all, or is the National Park Service already hitting a home run here? We don't know yet.
Well, that's what I think. If Mark asks them the question, are they sincere, are they really positive, if that's what they're going to do, there's no sense of the county staff wasting staff time.
I don't understand. Did the Park Service say they were interested in the county, or did Jamie Herrera's office?
Jamie Herrera's office.
Well, that's a big difference.
There is. And
because they were also interested in helping the city.
Well, the city was interested in, and that was a mutual good, mutual support there. But when the city pulled their support, then they either got abandoned to just simply let it stay the way it is, or it could still come back to our community in a different form. By the way, there's no thing as involved in annexing or anything like that. You just simply transfer the asset as a historic site.
Well, I think that's what the city is asking for. So I don't understand why the U.S. Parks Department would be more willing to talk to us versus that of the city of where the Air Museum is.
Well, this was initiated by a coalition, including the city. So at this point...
You didn't answer my question.
What's the question?
The question is, why would the U.S. Parks Department be more interested in talking to the county than they would be the city where the museum is located?
Well, it's because it's both. I don't know if it's... I don't even think it's... It might not even be incorporated into the city. The city transferred that asset to the National Park Service, I think, 5 years ago. It used to be... an asset of the
long?
City.
Wasn't that long. It's only been like maybe three. And they thought they were going to work out, and all of a sudden they didn't.
I'm not talking about the latest thing. I'm talking about prior to that. It used to, the National Park Service never used to be involved.
That's right. It was part of the Vancouver Trust down here. So I am.
Why don't we just let Mark grab up all the information, then the next board meeting we can...
Which is all I'm asking, is to find out the answers, research it, and then come back so that we know what the basics are,
what
the options are.
I'd like to know what it would cost.
Exactly.
Yep.
If it was so granted to us.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see it being granted to us and not to the city.
I don't know
why. Why would they ever do that?
The historic reserve down there, it would be hard for me to see them turn over 7 acres of that historic trust to the county or to the city. The one.
7 acres of the city to the county.
vice versa. Okay.
So let's go back, what would it cost if we did that?
Mm-hmm.
And then once we know the cost, get an idea where we're going to fund it from, and then have Herrera's office go.
Can we first determine whether or not the National Park Service is going? Because if they're going to create a viable program and they're going to run this thing in perpetuity,
why waste our time and money?
Why would we?
Yeah, that's part of the research.
Why would we not do it with our money?
That's part of the research. We want to find out.
So my first order of business is going to be to call the curator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
Financially,
they'll take care of that.
The curator will know what it costs to operate it.
The problem seems to lie with the exhibitors and what rights they would have in the federal parks with their exhibits there.
Yeah, what I read here was that was the National Park Service wanted the aircraft exhibits to be limited to the Chkalov flight.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the Russian fellow that flew across the North Pole and landed here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a street named after him. Others wanted general aviation exhibits in there, and the Park Service said no. And that was part of the conflict.
And part of the conflict too was to ensure that it was appropriate for and supported by our community. if the community, if those people, those organizations that feel passionately about this important part of our identity, if they feel like that's not the kind of content, that's not the kind of activity, that's not the kind of identity that is us, then we should know that as well. Vancouver Trust ought to be able to give us an input. So, and all these things is to find out how well is it working, and should there be an alternative that would be worth pursuing? And if so, what would it cost?
Well, one of the big conflicts that they had, and I know that they got really upset because the Historic Trust wanted to continue to allow people to have fundraisers in there, have dinners. They had the Veterans of Foreign Wars. They had the Red Cross Dancing with the Stars. They didn't think that those fundraisers for all these different organizations were appropriate to have in the Air Museum. They moved the planes around, put them in the extra hangars and that, and raised money for the nonprofits by having them there. Mm-hmm. And the gal, when she came in here, said no.
She wanted to schedule a year ahead of time.
Oh,
something
yeah.
Like
she
that
didn't
too.
Want to have any part of that, David. So mm-hmm. it just, like I say, there's a whole lot of conflicts there. And I think that this email here, if we could find out for sure how serious mm-hmm. they are about continuing their program that they
yeah.
want to do.
Yeah,
and why waste
Commissioner
time?
Barnes, this is a website, yeah. National Park Service website.
Yeah.
Talking strictly about Pearson Air Museum.
Mm-hmm. And all of those events that you just listed, and many more, were community supporting events, were really good things.
And they kicked them out.
And they kicked them out. Yeah. And so how well does that work for our community? We should know, we should find out the answers to that.
But here they're asking people if you want to have a wedding.
Well, now they're
if you
want to
go picnic.
If they're solving the problem so that it becomes a useful community yeah. resource again, then that's good news.
They got an entire section on permits, how to apply, what kind of events are, you know, you can't serve alcohol, you can't do this or that, but please, you know. We've got a meadow you can rent. We've got a building and this and that. So
they have to work something out with exhibitors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a museum with no exhibits is kind of boring.
Yeah.
So you're
going
to send us a link to
I already
those
have.
And you're way ahead of it. I'm not surprised.
That's why I live
okay.
my iPad.
Moving on. 2014 WFOA.
Okay. Commissioners, I had a conversation with each of you separately about my certified public accountant status. And the fact that to maintain that status, I need continuing professional education, 120 hours every 3 years. I'm substantially behind in completing the 120 hours to keep my license valid. And you all supported the notion of the county helping me get those hours under my belt. This conference, I haven't been to a conference in 7 years. I've been very frugal. This is a conference in Yakima. I would drive my personal car there, and I would get a serious number of continuing professional education credits by doing it. So I would like your permission.
I'm good.
If
second motion.
We support our administrator and your continuing professional skills.
Outstanding. Thank you very much. All right. Commissioner, I'll turn it over to you.
Are you good with that?
Voting Tom.
I was still trying to figure out what. If he's going to be a finance officer or something else, but since we don't know yet, so. Yes.
Yeah, you got a unanimous.
It's in September. So, and once I get my 120 hours, I won't ask to go again because I'll have another 3 years. So,
and at it. Enjoy.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Mielke. I'm turning the meeting over to you.
Great. Until we know what we're going to do with you, I think so.
Well, you've been nice so far. You waited until 3 o'clock.
Okay. Commissioner report. David Medore, do you have anything besides Pearson Air Museum?
No, sir.
No.
I'm good.
All right.
I have all mine on my one-on-ones.
Axel, do you have anything else?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, hey, you'll get more to-dos if you talk.
Well, yeah, I got a long list.
See, Ed, right away, you realize that you and I have more time when these guys don't have anything. Oh. Ed, do you have anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, just a couple of things. I got an email from a constituent that's extremely upset about Frenchman's Bar.
What's it say?
It's all bad. About the behavior of the people down there and that.
Well, we heard about two guys fighting.
Yes.
Well, more than that. Yeah.
Now,
more than that?
Yeah.
Well, this is there's a lot of traffic, and we need to charge a fee to keep unsavory characters out of the park.
And bicyclers are having a terrible time now getting down along the road. The people are about ready to run over them and trying to get to the park to use the park, and people are drag racing and all kinds of stuff. So
yeah, I think that sheriff, a woman who's part of the biking crowd came to a hearing and talked about...
They don't pay for parking, do they?
No. No, but they do time trials down there, and apparently they can't do their time trials because their people drive irresponsibly.
Going crazy. The other thing is that both the assessor and the treasurer sent, I think you guys got the same email I got about trying to get some 24/7 coverage, get some computer updates and stuff. I don't know whether you guys received this. I think you probably did.
I'm not familiar.
I
think we need that. Maybe the board needs to have Mark look into that and do a little more discussion.
And I have. And you and I had a conversation about that. And what happened was that the new county assessment taxation system needed an upgrade, and the upgrade was performed over the weekend prior to the taxes being due. There was a glitch in that upgrade process that brought a system down, and so we had citizens that could not access
anything.
The Property Information Center.
Perfect timing.
Exactly.
It's not healthcare, is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
So
that maybe like Obamacare.
Now, I don't personally know why people need to go to the Property Information Center the weekend before paying their taxes. They get an advice in the mail. You know, if they keep the advice, they just write the check and off it goes.
I don't do that. I wait until the very last minute.
I can tell you why.
Okay, I'd love to hear it.
Because those notices go out in February, and the bills aren't due till April 30, and they don't necessarily know where to get that. It's months in between. That was perfect timing for them to be able to take that system offline right when people are at the point where they're writing their property tax tax.
Exactly. The two elected officials that are complaining knew that that we were doing that upgrade, and you never do something risky like that.
So, Mr. Administrator.
3 days, yes, believe me.
I've already dealt with
I have had the conversations with the necessary people.
With those two elected officials that chose to do that at that time.
It might have been suggested that we delay to the following weekend, but nobody thought to do that.
The question is there still something to do to ensure that those departments are supported enough by IT, or is it resolved?
I believe it's resolved. First time in 13 years, we know why it happened.
So you could.
I don't expect it's going to happen again. Our IT model. We're austere. We have a lean IT operation here. Believe it or not. Support could improve if we were to dramatically increase their budget, but that's not in the works, and that's just not.
So we're okay.
Well, the only comment I would make to it, both at the breakfast we had downstairs last week, both the assessor and the treasurer both still said they still need some upgrade. They're not asking for the world, but they do think that there needs to be some tweaking done, which would cost a little bit of money. And I think that Mark and I had a conversation, and I think that Mark could get with both of them people and see what they're talking about as far as the tweaks go. If it's not in the works, and where the money comes from, it comes from here.
It started off when we went back a year or two ago, and we said we'd like to have some kind of a program that those people that are delinquent could make payments.
Yeah.
And then went to the legislature, and what came out of the legislature isn't at all what we were asking for. It came out that they were going to allow some people to make, who were current on their taxes, to pay their taxes, and then we would charge them for the internet cost or whatever. And at that time, they were saying, we need $20,000 for a new program. And what they did was nothing what we asked for or what was needed. So, in fact, I was under the impression they've done under current budget But I think they're it's taken care of now, right, Mark? The problem that they had, the glitch that they had. So they've got their problem solved under current budget with what they have.
Yes. Now, you know, I meet with Linda Lotto. I meet with John Payne on a regular basis. Neither one of those folks has said a word to me about specific tweaks they want made to IT support. But I will go to both of them, and I will...
Well, I hear from Doug Lasher, I think.
Okay. Yeah, well, listen to both them elected officials.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, maybe Doug ought to talk to John, and then John can talk to me. Well, but I'll reach out proactively to both of them and say, hey, your bosses are saying things. What, you know, how about we have a conversation?
Yeah,
right. So the normal administration, trust your staff, right?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Administrator, let us know if they're if they're good, if they've been resolved, or if there's still something to be done. Hopefully they won't bypass that and come to us directly and say, hey, we're not being served.
Yeah, and the parks issue, we're hearing this about the Vancouver Lake one. I think it's great that we have more people using the parks. And I think we're always going to have one or two bad performers that we hear about over and over again. I don't think if you was to charge $1 or $3 to have them park, that the bad performers are still going to be there. They were there before.
But, you know, Tom, they didn't have that problem when they had – I'm not going to say – I'm just going to say they didn't have that problem when they were charging the fees down there. And when summertime gets warmed up here, you know that the people carry their coolers in there. No matter how many people you have, they're going to drink their wine. They're going to drink their beer.
That's what our ambassadors are supposed to be watching.
Well, I know they're supposed to be watching, but they're supposed to be watching that everywhere. But people – maybe come down there that have intentions to cause some difficulties, and when they have to put out, and I can tell you, Delta Park, when the races, drag races are over there, the motocross races, if they didn't charge them a fee to get in that place over there, you'd have a riot every time they have a drag race or every time you have motocross races. So all I'm saying is when you end up with 200 people and they all want to fight each other, from what I understand, that there was just damn near a riot that night, the last time that the sheriff went down there. City police, county police, and the state patrol all went there, plus your people in their orange vests. So I think that the people have a legitimate concern. They want to use a nice park that the county spent a lot of money on and bring that to Tom and I was at Luke Jensen Park Sunday to thank those people who were out there, which I thought was extremely great. I'd like to see about four more of them built within the county, someplace out close to Battleground, someplace out close to Camas. Same type of facility that with the pride those people have where they're not walking in the mud, they're on turf grass, they're on out there, the place is full of people, a nice concession stand in there, and it costs money.
$9 million.
I know it costs money,
but
it's the taxpayers that pay for it.
Can I set the record straight on something?
I got one more point.
I want to address this to set the record straight. The event that we're talking about where there was that fight and there was that chaos there in the park, there was no park staff. Whether or not we're fees to collect or not, there was no park staff. The problem was not that we didn't have fees. The problem is we didn't have staff. Traditionally, year by year, the staff has been way too late by a month or month and a half out there. That's been solved. Now we have, I love our new public works director. Very, very responsive.
He is.
Now there is park staff in every park, every hour that they're open. They are out there, their presence. And before anything escalates, they're very visible, they're engaging, they're being trained better as we go, so that they're visible authorities in the park. So that has been addressed. If we end up with more problems with park staff out there, I'd like to hear. But so far, we haven't heard anything. Now we have the park staff. And they know how to engage and to monitor, and if they need to call for help, whether or not there's fees or whatever, they'll call for help. And the Vancouver, that is in the city limits of Vancouver, Vancouver Police Department patrols that road, and they understand if there's M history there, that's revenue enhancement. Go collect your tickets.
Oh, yeah. And Bill Bjorke has been working with the sheriff to get reserve deputies to go out there. They've got a certain number of hours they have to serve monthly, and heading to our parks is a good way for them to get some time. Plus, we've installed security cameras, and we're going to install more. And apparently at Pacific Park, we had a vandalism problem, and we put the camera up, and the vandalism problem went away. So,
When did this fight happen?
Oh, it was a month ago. It was in May.
Early May.
Yeah, it was in early May.
Before we even had the people
before there was staff.
Yeah, we had parks ambassadors on, but we weren't full up.
They weren't in that park.
No, they were at Salmon Creek Park. So we moved up the date by which we wanted to have the parks ambassadors fully staffed.
So this should not happen next year.
No.
But I don't want to make policemen out of the
No, that's not their role.
Their role is to report.
Eyes and ears. So
they're ready
and to be very visible authorities presence.
And they're a deterrent, because if you know there's an ambassador there with a radio or a cell phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They know what not to do. Don't try to stop a fight. Unless you want to be part of it, right?
Right. In the good old days.
Yeah.
So I think on occasion it's going to happen no matter where. Just like the assault that happened at Esther Shores.
Esther Shores.
Downtown.
Yeah, Esther Shores, right?
Yeah,
right,
I think in Hazeldale Park we had a heavily inebriated fellow early in the morning, and he had a knife.
We used to have that just walking down the street.
And we've never charged fees at Hazeldale Park.
So I don't think that's a problem. We've experienced somewhere between a $600,000 and $700,000 savings in our park system.
Well, like I say, as the weather warms up and the booze, and especially when they get the pot starts getting circulated around, the people are sitting out there smoking their joints and stuff like that.
Hopefully, before they get the first puff, we got someone there.
Then you'll see.
Yeah,
well,
alcohol is not allowed in our parks.
Yeah.
Staff being there can recognize that.
Yeah.
They're engaging.
He's got a brown paper bag. He's putting up to his face. You know something wrong.
That they put him in these black plastic things and put him in their Pepsi bottles. And I've been out there, guys, for years, so I know how they.
So I don't think it's the fees. I think that the person who can afford the fees can afford the booze, afford the pot.
Yeah.
So I don't. They'd be there no matter what.
So you got one good hot summer to see what happens.
We do, and I'm very curious to see how that track record gets developed, and say let's see what happens.
Yep.
Hopefully we won't have bad performers. You know, we have no matter where you go. We have them at the fairgrounds, so and that's totally saturated with policemen.
We have staff. The key there is to make sure that we have enough presence wherever there's public events, so that people can see them.
Yeah, the presence I think is really important. I always complained about unmarked police cars. And I always said, if you can see a marked police car, that's a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was not to catch them, it was to deter the problem from happening, or to make someone look at their speedometer and make sure they were obeying the law.
And the unmarked ones have a different agenda. It's revenue enhancement.
They tried putting those police cars out on the road. And people would call up and say, "You got a police car parked out of the road." State Patrol might have that problem. Anything else, Ed?
Yep.
No. Add a couple things. One, I have written down. I'd like to see when we have these one-on-ones. I'd like to try to, when we can, have more of those here. You better utilize our time. And I always say that sometimes I'll ask a question that Dave might not think to ask or something, so we have a better understanding as a board as to different things. We had the finance question today, instead of yesterday. You guys had it yesterday, I had it today. It'd be neat to have one here at board time when we can do those things. That way you might ask a question that I didn't think about. So that was one thing I just wanted to bring up. Another thing was,
I don't get it. In other words, if we have one-on-ones, basically we each do individual homework with the staff to be able to interact and make sure we understand whatever is in front of us. And then if there's leftovers from that, or there's things that we feel like it's something that still needs to be addressed as a commission, then we'll bring that to board time. Is that what you're saying?
I think a lot of times Mark brings us informative stuff. In this case, it was a refinance consideration for some of our bonds. I'd like to see that more as a board issue.
Okay, well, probably the best way to do that would be...
I can't think of anything other than executive time that we would have a one-on-one, unless it's something just popped up.
Well, for example, this week we had a discussion about potentially awarding a contract to a vendor. You don't do that in board time. That's something that...
We do it in executive time then?
Yeah, that's information that doesn't belong out in the community,
right?
Because we're making a decision to award money to a contractor.
Yeah. So that would be kind of the same scenario. I may not understand it all the way, or may not ask the question that somebody else might ask that would help me understand it.
Right. But there's some topics where staff and I believe that we should do one-on-ones. And as Commissioner Brodeur said, if nobody gets it, or if there's a wide range of opinions on the board, then we might have to have a joint discussion. But
that'd be good.
But many of these things are slam dunks. Got it? Great. Great.
Yeah. Don't want to hold up the progress of the administration.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I will exercise some discretion in what I can bring to board time.
I'm thinking better utilize their time.
Exactly.
They don't have to be here once.
Sure.
And the other thing, I think we got a copy of Juvenile Detention Officer Guild on a labor thing. I think that is on that reorganization that they're doing down there.
And you'll notice my initials aren't on the paper.
That's correct, though.
I'm just verifying that's what it was. We are aware of it.
It's a reorg because the...
Yes, yeah, this is a perk notice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I have seen that.
Okay.
So I put initials on there.
Something I forgot to bring up before, and when I had my meeting with Matt Brown, I told him I'd do that last week. When we rezoned at the Duluth, we didn't make inclusive... with Battleground, and we told them when we did the kind of like an MOU with the Wastewater Alliance that any zoning that we would do along that corridor that we would keep them in the queue to notify them, and in the rush to do so and whatnot, we didn't share with them that we were doing that or didn't include them in the conversation. Not that we have to do what they say, it's just that we said out of courtesy, as we put together the Wastewater Alliance, that they were concerned with some of the zoning outside their city. So I just mentioned that when we do that we try to remember to make them inclusive.
Is there something that we need to go back and revisit?
Or what it was is that they didn't have a problem with the first lot that we changed the zoning on the northwest corner, but there was a lot between that lot and the housing that was there, that was the owner was also wanting to be inclusive in that. So when we took action on it, we didn't take action on the second lot to the north. We're going to address that at a later date. So as we go forward to address that, we want to remember to include Battleground or to notify Battleground that we're doing what we're doing and what.
Okay.
Okay. Ed Hanson.
Yes, Ed.
One other quick comment. When you're talking about real estate, at a meeting we had yesterday, I brought up the fact of the realtors. I don't know how involved the realtors get, because I know they put out a thing of how many houses are available in the county, how many are up in that. So whenever we put a package together like that, maybe in the future, as not just the CRDC, or these groups like that, or the City of Richfield or Battleground, maybe the realtors should be, whoever's the head of the Realtor Association for Clark County should be able to come in and say, we have this much inventory ready to sell, but they've been on the books for 2 years, 15 months, or whatever it is, so that we don't shortchange those people. There's a lot of realtors that are out there making a living, good living, that spend a lot of money in this community. They support the community, so we need
our staff.
Adriana Prada with our budget office does a financial briefing. I think it's once a quarter.
And I think she gets her information from the realtors.
Yeah, and then she reports on median home prices and turnover and inventory and all that.
I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
In the hearing we had regarding the path forward, you were concerned about the condition of the real estate market, and we didn't have a resource available to us to say how hot is the market, is a seller's market or a buyer's market. And it would be going forward, if we make planning decision kinds of decisions, what you're asking is that we would make sure that we have some resources available to us to inform us as the current state and maybe the trends of the real estate market. Do I say that right?
Just like Scott Bailey, you look at his figures, you look at the rest of them, you should be able to look at the real estate part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good
point.
It's
a big part of the county.
So Oliver would want to include.
More is better.
Realtor representatives.
So the other thing I had on my list was the action on panhandling. We haven't had anything new. It's my understanding that the panhandling ordinance that we were starting to take off of was one out of Pierce County. And in doing so, Pierce County's ordinance for panhandling had a constitutional challenge, so we're up in the air.
Hold off until
they... We're up in the air on that, yes.
Yeah, it was actually... So we followed suit with Pierce County, looked at their language, and dropped an ordinance based on that. But their language was almost identical to the city of Boise, Idaho. And so Boise, Idaho ended up in federal district court, and they got their ordinance... basically struck down. The court sided with the ACLU. So Sergeant Brandon Walker's continued to work on that, though, and he did send some other language over that Chris and I need to review. So we're going to do that and get back with him, and we'll keep working on it. We just got to do it within the confines of the Constitution.
Okay.
I see your security guy this morning when I come in early, stopped in the cafeteria down there. He had to run couple people out of there that were filling their pockets up full of sugar and salt and
grits.
So it's hard for that guy to make money down there. There's people doing that. Yeah. I had to run one out after the building closed last night, camping out in the lobby outside on the second floor.
Do we have any update on the animal control progress?
I have a meeting on Monday the 30th.
Okay.
I've got the assessor coming. I've got public health coming. I got facilities coming. All folks who use remote devices similar to this.
Yes.
And doing work out in the field.
Awesome.
And Jim Hominick will be there. And essentially, this box right here is remarkably useful because if I push this little button right there, an application opens up. My computer on my desk in that office right there is this one right here.
Yeah.
So I push that. I press that little bar. I put in my password, and presto changeo, I'm now on my desktop.
That's one we're looking for.
Okay. Now iPads are not very functional with this remote access. They're clunky. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause, you know, you push, nothing happens. You hit enter, nothing happens. But the Surface tablet, the brand new one, the 3 Plus Pro or whatever it's called, Jim Hominick is going to buy one of those, and we're going because if I'm an animal control person and I'm in a truck, I can go to this iPhone, and if I go to settings, I can turn on. there's a thing on here called a personal hotspot, and that turns into a Wi-Fi. This can communicate through the phone, through the 4G LTE network. Come back to the county, and I have my desktop here. And if I have the Tidemark on my desktop, I can use Tidemark in my truck.
Well, we also have little Wi-Fi things.
MiFi, yeah, I think they're called.
Is that MiFi?
Yeah.
We have those also that we use for our...
Yeah, we do, but you can't make phone calls on those.
No.
And you have to pay extra.
And you have to pay extra.
Month.
So if I have a phone like this, the personal hotspot's another $10 a month or so, but but it gives the animal control people connectivity without spending...
And we're not duplicating the work.
We're not spending anything, hardly, except for the Surface tablet.
I've been waiting for IT to configure my iPad for weeks. Multiple times calling them.
What time do you leave today?
I'll be here.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's all I have.
You said that was a Surface Pad 3.0 is what you call it?
The Surface something. I don't know.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
You're good. Okay.
So, Commissioner Mielke, in a month.
That's all we wanted was just them working on it.
You'll be able to go on a ride-along with Animal Control and watch them do their stuff on
I'll stay at home and look at their computer and watch them do it.
I am headed up to Livingston on Friday.
Oh, great.
Very good. Well,
I'm sorry?
Up to Livingston on Friday.
Oh.
And I've been reading all that information that your secretary gave me, all the reports and the petition signed by 201 people. I counted the names. Individual read
that's
their
100
comments. Read their comments. Read their good. Comments. And that, so anyway, just
get that input. Citizen representation. What's all about.
And I talked to Rod, the chair of the Planning Commission.
Ron Barka. Well, he used to be chair. He's not chair now.
Yeah, about 40 minutes today.
Good.
So,
okay.
Try to make sure to get all the bases covered.
Great work. Diligent.
Yep.
Very good.
Did you get up into the quarry yet?
No.
That's going to be interesting.
I will.
One thing that surprised me was that it was only halfway mined out.
Yeah.
The existing mine.
Yep.
Okay.
So I have Mark.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
We are
adjourned.
We'll do
adjourned.
You're okay.
Gonna
we're done.
I move that we adjourn.
Second it.
All the baby already turned us off.
No, I didn't.
Okay. No, I didn't.
Very adjourned. I got to be important by
thank
five.
You.